Blog Talk Radio.
Soldiers are citizens of death's grey land, drawing no dividend from time's tomorrows. In the great hour of destiny they stand, each with his feuds and jealousies and sorrows. Soldiers are sworn to action, they must win some flaming, fatal climax with their lives. Soldiers are dreamers, when the guns begin they think of firelit homes, clean beds and wives. I see them in foul dugouts, gnawed by rats, and in the ruined trenches, lashed with rain. Dreaming of things they did with balls and bats, and mocked by hopeless longing to regain. Bank holidays, and picture shows and spats, and going to the office in the train.
Welcome, everyone. This is In Our Craft, Your Soul in Art. I'm Late Night Poet, All Poetry, and I'm your host, Richard Weissman. And apologies for the technical difficulties. I had some trouble getting in, but our admin, Phil My Eyes, was able to help me out. And so we are starting the show. And I can tell that we've got some callers. Let me bring them on one by one. Okay, and there's Laurent. How are you doing, Laurent?
I'm doing good, Richard. I'm glad you were able to overcome the difficulties.
Yeah, sometimes it just happens. Technology can be challenging, but luckily Phil was in the background and she saw my my text on the group chat and made it all work. So thanks so much for joining me. I see we've got another caller, so let me bring them on as well.
Good evening, Richard.
Hi, 70. Hi. Is that Tom?
Yeah, it's Tom.
Welcome. Glad you could join us. Sorry about the technical difficulties, but we are doing a show. Yeah, and so obviously that was one of the war poets that was soon. And I had actually heard it before the show, so I knew what it was. And I actually know that poem pretty well. It's a great piece. And I thought it was an appropriate way to start the show. Thoughts on it. Laurent, what did you think of it?
It was very moving. One of the immortal poems about war.
Yeah.
And it's too bad that poems about war have to be immortal. Would that there be no war at all? I love his voice, though. Beautifully done.
Yeah, yeah. There were a couple of recordings of that poem. I thought, I chose the one that seems more kind of sonorous and solemn.
Yeah, who was it who recorded that?
You know, at the moment I knew it, and if I pull it up again, I'll probably get it. But it was pretty famous actor. I don't have it at my fingertips, but I'll pull it and put it into the chat when we've got a moment. And Tom, what did you think of the piece?
I liked it. I agree. It was solemn, but I thought a lot of that was the voice and the way he let the words sort of resonate as he spoke. Very good piece.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, appropriate for Veterans Day, appropriate for Memorial Day, too, unfortunately. But and with that, let's go ahead and start playing through poetry, since I know we got a little bit of a late start. So, Laurence, I'm giving you the board.
Oh, that's a weighty responsibility. I'm going to take these in order. And the first one goes to you as reader by Chuck 17. It's up now.
Okay. Now, Chuck did warn me that this was not a formal poem, but instead a write about the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier. And it goes like this. The Tomb of the Unknown Soldier is a sacred monument to those who gave all. It honors unidentified soldiers who fought and died to keep us free. We honor their memory. The Army is in charge of guarding the tomb. 24 hours, 365 days of the year, the guard is here. A sentinel guard chosen for the Tomb of the Unknown is considered one of the highest honors a soldier could receive. Less than 20% of the candidates are chosen for training, and only a fraction ever become tomb guards. The guards wear no rank on their uniforms, so they do not outrank those who are honored here. The guards have a meticulous pattern of steps to walk, 21, north, south, east, and west, in honor of a 21-gun salute, symbolizing the highest honor a soldier can receive. Out of respect, absolute silence is maintained, except for the changing of the guard commands. The white marble tomb stands on a hill overlooking Arlington National Cemetery in Washington, D.C. End of history of the tomb. And Laurent, let's start comments with you. What did you think of the intro?
I thought the intro was good. We all know about the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier, and we think we know about it. But then when we get into the backstory, we realize there's so much more to it than we had realized, perhaps. So this is a great help to those who are aware of the tomb, have seen it on television, have seen many of our presidents leave the wreath at the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier. But, you know, did we know anything about the Sentinel Guards? Did we know who was in charge of guarding it? Did we know that guards wear no rank? And did we know about their meticulous pattern of steps they walk? I knew none of that. So I thought this was a great piece honoring the tomb.
Yeah. You know, I have to say me as well. I thought I knew about it, and I didn't know those details. And it's specifically the fact that they wear no rank, so that they do not outrank those who are honored. It gave me chills to learn that.
And
quite appropriate, too, that it's done that way.
Mm-hmm.
And, Tom, I'm going to give you final word on our intro here.
I've been fortunate and have been there on several occasions and gotten to see the changing of the guard, which is something that you can see it on TV and it doesn't have a tenth of the power or the effect that it can have on you when you see it live. And I got to see it once totally by accident because I was taking a couple of Aussies who had been on AP and I'd gotten to know who came to visit. And we were going through the Arlington Cemetery. I sort of came in off the Carillion bells. So I came in from the back side of it and just stumbled on it as they were changing the guard and stuff like that. And this year is notable because this is the first year that everybody in over 100 years, everybody's been able to go up and, since World War I, but go up and lay flowers at the at the National Guard besides the president. So I know the Blue Star Moms are up there today laying wreaths and stuff. There's a lot of people who are taking advantage of that this year.
Awesome. See, I didn't know that either. So.
just a little more info. I thought you'd appreciate that.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I do. You know, that's what adds so much color to these shows, is the details that that our participants, our readers bring. And with that, I'm turning it back to you for our next one, Laurent.
All right, our next poem by Paul Thomas, and putting it up for Tom to read.
Okay. Left Behind by Paul Thomas One. A military man or woman does not go to battle alone. Each one leaves behind a combination of mother, father, sibling, spouse, or their own children. The nature of conflict changes with time. Human emotions do not. Many families never see their departed loved one again. The thought is not for the physical loss alone, shell shock, World War I, battle fatigue, World War II, PTSD, modern terminology. My many years in the United States Navy were not all duty and service. The greatest sacrifice was made by the woman I married. It is to all military families the dedication of this poem. End poem.
Great read, Tom. Yeah, I love this piece. Heartfelt, heartwarming, honoring the families that support those that serve, I thought it was another kind of, you know, I chose that first one to be our first piece because I thought it would set the tone quite well, and I thought this one would be a nice kind of follow-up since it gives a broad spectrum and shows the sacrifices of families. And my wife is actually, they call them military brats. She was raised, her dad was in the military for his entire career. And so there's lots of sacrifice. He wasn't around much, and they moved around every couple of years. So I thought that a fitting second piece. And, Laurent, what were your thoughts?
Well, the fighting man or woman spends the day at war. And then at night, hopefully, they have a chance to relax and catch up while they're off duty. And they'll sit and write patient and loving letters to home. And by the same token, they'll open up the old letter or the letter they received a day or two ago from the family. They'll read it, news of the day, what the neighborhood is doing. And letters to veterans from home are usually not going to be filled with any ill news unless it's of vast importance. Those letters are not designed to worry the veteran who is fighting. And so the stay-at-home family sometimes just doesn't have the ability to communicate to the veteran or the fighting man or woman the bad news. Now, that's for my generation. This new generation with Skype and Messenger, entirely different. Now, perhaps, the veteran does have the chance to see that Junior is struggling with this, or that little Amy is struggling with that, or that so-and-so died, you know, because they used to tell families, try not to deliver bad news to the fighting men and women. Keep it light, which I think is somewhat ridiculous, but I can understand the impulse behind that direction. So families at home sometimes don't have the ability to communicate what's going on, and they do suffer in silence. Many of the time I've heard somebody late at night opening a letter, breaking down and crying, because they've discovered something awful has happened at home, and they can do nothing about it. And that kind of, what's the word I want? they don't have the ability to do anything about it, so they have to internalize it. And they're not themselves at all. So it works both ways. It's a great piece.
Absolutely. Great comment. Tom, your thoughts? Did you already comment?
I can look at this from several directions because I have a son right now who's on duty and located, and I'm going to be, even though he's in the National Guard, he's located in Texas for the next year. And I can remember as a kid during the Cuban Missile Crisis, my father was an executive officer on board a destroyer and chasing submarines. And you'd sit in the school and talk about the fact that we were like, it being in Norfolk, we were like the third one they were going to drop the atomic bomb on, and make jokes about it, but at the same time be worried and scared. And you kind of worry about your father, but you don't know enough, even though I was in seventh grade, about the seventh or eighth grade, I forget which, when that happened. And you just hold your breath and pray a lot. And with my son gone, you know, it's like, even though he's not living with us anymore, you still want to know, are you all right? Is everything okay? It's funny when they're on duty, it doesn't matter what kind of duty it is. As a parent, you worry. It just goes to the territory. So yeah, he did a lot of it right on the nail head. Very well done.
Absolutely. Great comment. With that, let's move on to our next one, Laurent.
All right. We've got a SoundCloud by Martha Gettle. I'm going to put that up.
Yeah. Absolutely. I am ready for that.
The Army. In the 11th hour, with the Army coming down, pieces of the battle lay scattered all around. He did not need his helmet, he did not need his gun. For this poor soldier, the battle, it was done. His unit found him, and they gathered round the body of their buddy as he lay there on the ground. They sent him back to camp with tears in their eyes. Then it was another person's turn to cry. When she saw the two men standing at her door, she knew she'd never see her husband anymore. Her little boy came running to see who was there. He didn't have to ask. Misery filled the air. She took him in her arms and she held him tight. She said, I love you so, and this isn't right. I know that Daddy said he'd be coming home, but son, I'm afraid he'll be a long time gone. The little boy grew up, life was mostly the same. The good times went, and the good times came. He graduated high school, mostly for his dad. But even that act left him feeling sad. She took him in her arms, and she held him tight. She said, I love you so, and this isn't right. I know that Daddy said he'd be coming home, but son, I'm afraid he'll be a long time gone. He came to his mama, said, you need to know, I have signed the papers In the army I will go. She stood there with tears on her face and watched her son leave to take his father's place.
Wow. Thank you for the SoundCloud, Martha. That was pretty awesome. And I see we have Kel. Let me bring her on.
Hello.
Hey, Kel, you're on the air. Hi. Glad you could join us. Sorry for the technical difficulties, but we are having a show. So I don't know if you had a chance to hear Martha's a cappella rendition there.
I heard like maybe the last bit of it. I was getting a cup of coffee while I was waiting for you to come on.
Okay.
So I mostly
Okay. Well, we're glad you're here, and I'll go ahead and start us out. So, you know, I love her song Always, but I thought this one in particular was so well suited to the subject matter that SoundCloud and the voice and the accent, it just had that quality of rural Americana at war, and it just seemed like, you know, it really just hit the nail on the head. And I don't know if that's because, in part, before my time, before I was born, but my dad was stationed as an officer in Camp Lejeune, North Carolina. So for me, when I think of the military, I always think of, like, the South. So that accent kind of just brings it home for me. At any rate, it just kind of touched as this true note of what it is to be a soldier serving in the American Army in America. With that, let's turn to Laurent. Your thoughts on this one?
I gotta agree with you on rural Americana. I had a sense that this is from somebody who lived back in the early part of the 20th century, perhaps. And so many people were lost in that war. Not that many others were lost in other wars, but you know, it was a world war. It was somehow a little bit different. And boy, we sent our troops off to fight. And this scene, as depicted in Martha's excellent poem, happened thousands and thousands and thousands of times, over and over again. A young person learning that a father wasn't coming home, and how it affected them. And he misses his father. And Martha has him enlisting, to the mother's dismay, something else that also happened because he was going to go somehow and fight his father, or at least fight his spirit. Back in World War One is when military families started displaying service flags in their windows. And, of course, Blue Star was for a serving family member. And then Gold Star meant that member had died. We had a blue star in our window. One of my sons fought in Iraq. Thank God it never turned to gold. This is a beautiful piece. I like your interpretation of rural Americana. It has that flavor.
Absolutely. Great comment. And Tom, I'm going to give you final word. What'd you think?
I love Martha's stuff. Just before I even say anything else, I thought she captured really well the family trauma and the son trying to do his daddy proud, even though it hurts mom. There's a part in here that I worked on this woman's house and found out while I was there. There's a Vietnam movie with Mel Gibson in it, and I forget the title, but it's a true story because it was done from a book that was written. And she was telling me about it. She goes, yeah, and I'm the woman who, when the first battalions were sent over to Vietnam, She said it was my husband's base they left from, and that the women were living, you know, living on and base housing. And when the first letter came back of death, my husband wasn't quite sure how to handle it. And I decided the right and proper thing to do was that I should deliver it. And so she was the one who went to each person's house when the letter was, you know, when the letter came saying that when somebody had been killed in Vietnam, and presented it to the woman. She had, a couple of soldiers with her, but she felt that it was important for the commandant's wife to be there in the presentation. And they showed that on the film. But it just really moved me to no end when she said the thing about the two guys coming up to the door, because it has, just from what I, what people have told me, a really personal feeling, kind of put a few tears in my eyes.
Absolutely, yeah. Great comment. And with that, Laurent, let's move on to our next piece.
Our next reader is Kel, if you'd be so kind. And I'm putting up a piece by Nora Nine.
Okay.
I can't imagine Kel not being kind, so.
Whenever you're ready, Kel.
I'm reloading. It didn't come up.
You're getting loaded? What was that?
Okay, I got it now. Armistice Day by Nora Nine. 11/11/1918. Finally, all was quiet on the Western Front, and the Eastern, too. The shells stopped exploding. The guns stopped firing. The Great War was over. The lunatic imperialist land grab moved into a less deafening phase. Armistice Day, hooray, and people were truly grateful. Armistice Day highlighted hopes for lasting peace. Now we call it Veterans Day, highlighting those who fought, their terrible sacrifices, and the unending grief of their loved ones. I would like to know, how can we honor the warriors without glorifying war yet again? And poem.
Great read, Cal. Yeah, I love the question, how can we honor the warriors without glorifying war yet again? And that is always the issue. To honor the people who gave so much, whether it was years of their lives or their lives, without having it, descend into glorifying war. I like that she doesn't answer question, that she leaves it as a question so that it kind of just sits there in our mind's eye and kind of ruminates and bubbles and causes us discomfort, as it should. So I thought it was a good ad for the night. And Laurent, your take on it?
Well, I think we honor the fallen victims of the horror of war. We might honor the ideals we were forced to fight for without glorifying the war itself, yet by giving honor to those, it sometimes honorably the glorification of our fallen bleeds over into somehow glorifying the war. I've always thought it was possible to separate the two, but ironically, very, very difficult. So the poem makes a great point. I also like the fact that she referenced All Quiet on the Western Front. If you want to read about the horrors of war, read that book. Excellent.
Absolutely. That is probably the classic anti-war novel. And Kel, as our reader, I'm going to give you final word.
Oh, I thought it was very deeply profound. I liked the beginning as well. Explaining the start of Armistice Day or Veterans Day. But that last line, that really hits it home. Yeah, it's just very good question and very thought-provoking. And I have no idea how to answer it. But it was a very well-done poem.
Absolutely. Great comments, everyone. And with that, I'm turning it back to you, Laurent, our next piece.
Okay. The next piece up, and I'm basically going right down the list in order we're trying to, is by Liz G. Lucas. It's called 11th Day, 11th Month, 11th Hour. Each year, I don't move from my chair, watching Remembrance Sunday. We wear our poppies to watch the veterans pass by the cenotaph, arms sway like a soldier they once were. Often I see one poor old soul in a wheelchair. So few of them are left now as the years pass by. The royal family came to pay homage with a wreath. Our queen is quite elderly now, at 95, and we'll watch from a balcony nearby. Her dear husband passed away this year in April. She'll watch her son Charles lay her wreath, and her daughter, and many more royal members. This year, Harry will not be there, for he has shamed himself. Our queen will not stay away from the proceedings, for during the war, she too did her bit, driving tractors, lorries with her sister Margaret. Makes me so proud of them both. Although Margaret passed away some years ago, all the heads of state join in laying wreaths until the bugler sounds the bugle for the 2-minute silence. This is where I stand up, and tears fall over my cheeks. I've done that since I was 14, crying for those that were killed, and remember my dad on a special mission in Japan, Burma, and places like that. A story he took to his grave and never forgot. We only discovered his heroic actions weeks before he passed away, which plagued him more than 70 years. At least we know why he got so cross for no reason when youngsters. This is always a special time of year. End poem.
Well done, Laurent. It's a whole different thing. Armistice Day for the English. So you guys probably know this, that my mom is from London, and actually three of my four grandparents are from London. And it really was this very strange thing that the bombing of Britain and the Blitz, and everyone was involved in it. For a long time, Britain really was alone against Nazi Germany. And there were no civilians. Civilians were part of the war effort, including the Queen. And I think that's why the older generation really loves the Queen so much, in a way that, younger people can't really understand. It's just a remarkable thing. And my mom's dad, my mom was evacuated to Cornwall. They took the kids and sent them out to the countryside, ostensibly so that they would be safe, but in reality so that the parents could focus on winning the war. My grandfather had terrible eyesight, but he was a kosher butcher. So his job was in the home guard was to drag the corpses from the rubble after the bombing every night. so, and you know, that's what he did. So it really was this cultural phenomena, which is hard for us in America to understand, fortunately. And I thought she did a wonderful job of capturing that. So very well done. And Tom, your thoughts?
I can relate to this, even though I'm not British. And it also, it's funny, but people like my mother and my grandmother really thought a great deal of the Queen and hearing about her and her sister Margaret running lorries and tractors. That brings home that common touch, you might call it, that made it for people of my parents' generation and their parents something why they herald her as being such a great human being, which for years, truthfully, I never understood. I really like this piece. It's very enlightening and touching at the same time.
Absolutely. And, Laurent, I'm giving you the final word on this piece.
give me one second here. I'm sorry. The British were like brothers to us in World War II, among other nations, so brutally attacked by Hitler. And, of course, it is our home country, so to speak, having seceded from the British Empire when we did. I like the way that they pay homage, and I like the fact that this poem didn't just give us their routine for paying homage, but went into the backstory a little bit about the Queen and Margaret, the bit that they did. I like the fact that she expresses the emotions at the loss of her father in the way that she did. I was actually pleased that you mentioned Harry, who will not be there, for he has shamed himself, not just a remembrance of Remembrance Sunday, but something a little bit deeper than that. When you have memories like that, you need to bring them out and share them. And it does help to ease the grief and give perspective. Great piece.
Absolutely, great comment. And we actually have someone I'm going to bring on. 703, you're on the air.
Thank you.
Hey,
happy Valentine's
Day. Bobby?
That's your favorite deranged captain.
Welcome. Glad you could join us. Now, did you have a chance to? Absolutely. Did you have a chance to hear Liz's piece?
I did not. I did not, but it sounded marvelous from the comments. I'll have to read it.
Awesome. Okay. So with that, Laurent, I'm turning it back to you for our next one.
All right. We have a SoundCloud from Rama Balasubramanian. You put that up?
Yep. Okay. So here's that.
Title of my poem is End All Wars. Bodies strewn all around, many a dead can be found. Cries of agony and pain fill the air. Mind only says this is not fair, let's end war here. Blood flowing all around, creating a red carpet on the ground. Firing and shooting continues in air. Mind only says this is not fair, let's end war here. Back at home, victory is announced. In many a home, crying abounds. Many cry over their only son lost. Their only support of life is lost. Many a child will ask for their father. How can mother say he is no more dear? Stealing away from people, their only breadwinner. Oh my God, this is not fair. Let's end war here. Let's end war here. Can compensation bring back a son? Can compensation rebuild a house in ruin? Can compensation compensate for lost hands and legs? Can compensation erase horrifying memories of war? Their thoughts are loud and clear. This is not fair. Let's end all wars here. Common man in both sides, busy with his daily life, desperately wishes to end this strife. It is the power-hungry politicians who create war-like situations. While they rejoice in victory, common man suffers in misery. Mind says loud and clear, this is indeed not fair. Let's end all wars here. Let's end all wars here. Thank you.
Thank you for the sound cloud, Rama. And let's start comments, if we can, with Bobby. What do you think? Are you on mute? Bobby dropped, so she's probably coming back. But in the meantime, Kel, what'd you think?
Wow. Oh, my goodness. This is just very... I'd say poignant, but it's not enough. It kind of brings home, okay, it's more of an in-your-face kind of thing. It kind of brings to mind how your war affects absolutely everyone, everywhere. Not just one country, but basically every country. You know, and everyone suffers. You know, everyone has losses, and it's just really a very deeply sad and eloquent poem. And I liked his rhyme and flow in this. It's just really, that part of it is really beautiful, but the message is very strong.
Absolutely. Great comment. And Bobby is back. Let me bring her back on. Hi, Bobby. You're back.
Well, you didn't want me to be here. You sure did say so. That's all.
So, were you able to catch this piece?
Parts of it. And so I went back and quickly read it. And I agree with prior comment, very strong message. This is definitely a strong indictment to war. There's no long suit to it. There's no benefit. Can we compensate for the losses? A very loud, strong message, and very well written. And the rhyming was very smooth. So it's an outstanding piece.
Absolutely. And Laurent, your thoughts?
A beautiful poem. I like how what Bobby said, and especially what Kel said as well. We hear a voice, different accent, different culture, same perspective. I don't care who you are, unless you're twisted and evil, you're going to view war in the same way, because war is... I mean, how do you describe war? There are no words really that will describe. The best thing you can say about war is what she said: "Let's end war here." You know, and she repeats that several times. And the result is always the same. When you have a child who goes to war, and that child dies, and filled with sadness and regret, as she says, bodies strewn all around, many a dead can be found. Crying is of agony and pain to fill the air. Mind only says this is not fair. Let's end war here. Kind of a rallying cry of the 60s, if I can remember. Touching piece. It moved me.
Absolutely, yeah. I kind of thought the refrain had a prayer-like invocational tone. And, you know, makes you want to say amen. So. And with that, let's move to our next piece, if we can.
All right. I'm going to put put up a piece for Bobby to read. Let me grab the link. Why, you don't want to read? Is that what you're saying?
No, I said goody.
Okay, I know, because you enjoy
reading.
You know
me, I asked for that request.
That's right. That's why I was thinking of maybe withholding it from you, but I don't have the heart.
Don't tease.
Okay, all right. Okay. Pieces up, it's by Mindy Newton.
Okay, we have Unknown by Mindy Newton, too. Unknown, you say, his legacy, decry his anonymity. But do we not, with clarity, know his brave fidelity? We know he left his home behind, answering all orders, trained for strength and courage, and crossed beyond our borders. He did without a thousand things. We know he bore privation. He swallowed fear and banked his pride, because he loved his nation. He surged ahead when ordered to. He fought beside his brothers, bit down on pain with sweating brow to close the line with others. The unknown soldier, as he's called, is known to every heart. Regarding his heroic works, his name's the lesser part. Never will his name be cried, although the morals told, nor history learn history and spare the brave and bold. End poem.
Nicely done, Bobby. And Thomas, we can start comments with you.
I like the structure. She got the rhyme really smooth and pulled, and helps to pull the whole thing together. He starts from the perspective of the unknown and his anonymity, and then just builds a really nice piece that speaks to how each person becomes almost anonymous when they end up on the battlefield, and all they can do is acknowledge one another, and then when it's all over, hope that respect and some recognition, you know, and that each person's doing their part. Well done piece. Very well done piece.
Great comment. And Laurent, your thought.
Unknown, you say, is legacy, decries anonymity, but do we not with clarity know his brave fidelity? Yeah, the unknown soldier is unknown, yet we know an awful lot about him. And those things are partially laid out in this fine poem. I won't repeat it all, but he's done his part, and we know what his part was. We know what the result is. So we may not know his or her name, but yet we know them deep down in our bones nonetheless. I thought this is a poem that really hit the mark concerning the unknown soldier.
Absolutely, yeah. No, I totally agree. I thought, and I agree with Tom's comment as well, the lyricism was flawless throughout, fitting tribute to the unknown, to the unknown soldier. Very nicely done. And with that, let's move to our next one.
All righty. Now, you'd think I'd be better prepared after all this time, but for some reason. Okay, you're our next reader. You'll recognize the author on this one, I'm sure. It's over at Richard.
Okay, so, my computer will go blind. Okay, so this one is called Hidden Wounds, and it goes like that. It's November 11th again. He's been in cities nearly half a century now. No parades, no marching bands will play on his street. Still, his every breath reminds all that he is among those who kissed warm California soil back in the 70s. and he is grateful. So despite the bone-chilling cold, he smiles for dirty windshields at each stoplight, though his eyes still jump when their autos backfire. And he still struggles to steady a pen when signing the disability check. The new doc from the VA hospital vaguely recalls him as one of those without the Purple Heart. Old-timers at Main Street Step meeting have his story memorized while patiently giving another white chipped hug. Some scream, get a job, out whizzing car windows, though most simply ghost his outstretched dirty palm. So tonight, when the champagne bottles pop and old newsmen praise those who serve, remember him, him whose mind is ever fogged by jungle shadows and whose home is nowhere in sight. End poem.
Bravo, Richard. Well done with this. You know, reading your AN, I'm going to have to now read Doeringer's 50 Sandwiches, which has got to be pretty good. I've never heard of it, but if it inspired you to this, I want to read it. You know, there are three portions of your poem I'd like to pick out. He still struggles to steady a pen when signing the disability checks, and the new doctor from the VA hospital vaguely recalls him as one of those without the Purple Heart. And lastly, remember him, in whose mind is ever fogged by jungle shadows, and his home is nowhere in sight. I view these as snapshots in time that tell the story of those wounded without visible scars, who carry an iron weight on their backs and in their minds that has bent them, broken them, without recognition or thanks from anyone, excepting the old-timers who perhaps share his disease. He lives in the darkness of jungle shadows, his home wherever his feet take him, a life distilled down to an outstretched palm. I thought you caught the character beautifully, Richard. His loneliness and pain, seemingly scorned by all passersby, and it's a tragedy many turn their faces from. Excellent piece. Cal, could we get a comment from you, please?
Yeah, this really reminds me of a couple of my uncles. One was in the Korean War, and another, I believe, was in Vietnam. But both of them fought, and both of them thankfully came home. And my one uncle, he's gone now. He passed away several years ago from kidney cancer. But anyway, he always had an emblem of some kind on whatever vehicle he had for the POWs. And he was a huge supporter of the POWs. And for some reason, this poem just, it reminds me of him more than the other uncle. Because the other one, I don't really know him very well. But, yeah. And it was always just like a look in Uncle Bobby's eyes. You know, it was just, and he was always looking over his shoulder, So it was just, he was a very valiant man. And I miss him dearly. But yeah, this is a very, very poignant, well-done poem. And it's sad how many of these soldiers did come home and they weren't recognized. Matter of fact, a lot of them, especially from Vietnam, were criticized and condemned and basically treated like crap when they came home. There was no parade for them. There was nothing for them except ridicule. And they were over there and they fought, and they fought through jungles and rivers and mud and muck, and you know, they did what they were supposed to do, and they came home and nothing for them.
So it's very sad, very, very sad how a lot of them turned out. This is a very, very well done poem, Richard. Thank you.
Thanks, Cal.
There was real passion in that voice, Cal. I think you really caught her with this one, Richard. Thomas,
yeah,
please.
I miss my uncle. I miss him a lot.
This just brought home a whole lot. First of all, I'm a Quaker and a pacifist, even with a father who was 23 years in the Navy. My mother was a Quaker. I have spent time with a lot of Vietnam vets because they needed somebody to talk to. And I don't need to go into all the stories or anything else like that, but I've heard a lot and I know a lot and I understand a lot of the pain. And also, it was because of the Vietnam War and partially the first Iraq War that made people realize that there really was such a thing as men feeling anxiety, because up until 1984, it was a woman's disease, and they talked about it. War fever and shell shock. And for a lot of the guys coming back from mom, they didn't know what to call it. And they were self-destruction left and right, and still are. I mean, it's one of the things that you touch on here with the AA meetings and the guys wandering down the street. It's still going on. I was at the Veterans Memorial today in Fredericksburg, and they were talking a lot about how we need to be more there for veterans, just in terms of listening and reaching out to them, because you never know when one's suddenly feeling a sudden need to end it all. This brings home a lot of memories. It's rough. Very well done, Bill, on your part.
Thank you, Thomas. Thank you, Thomas. And now, mon capitaine.
the title is so apropos. They are, in fact, hidden wounds. And I was having a conversation with one of my friends just a few days ago about the attitudes toward mental illness as opposed to physical mental disability as opposed to physical disability. And no one would think of ridiculing someone with a physical disability, yet the hidden wounds, the mental disabilities, do get targeted. And while others were commenting, I did a quick search, because of the poem, Richard's poem, and some of the things he said in here. Let's see. Some scream, get a job out whizzing car windows, though most simply ghost his outstretched dirty palm. I did a search on veteran homelessness facts. It says the vast majority of homeless veterans, 96%, are single males from poor disadvantaged communities. The number of homeless females is on the rise, but they're still vastly outnumbered. By men. Veterans between ages of 18 and 30 are twice as likely as adults in the general population to be homeless, and the risk of homelessness increases significantly among young veterans who are poor. 53% of individual homeless veterans have disabilities, compared with 41% of homeless non-veterans. Half suffer from mental illness, two-thirds suffer from substance abuse, and many from dual diagnoses. Which is defined as a person struggling with both mental illness and substance abuse. And homeless veterans tend to experience homelessness longer than their non-veteran peers. Veterans spend an average of nearly 6 years homeless compared to 4 years reported among non-veterans. And Richard's poem just brought that to light, and I'd heard about it, but I'd never seen these kind of figures. So I think The poem is just so beautifully and it lends dignity to the condition that seems to plague so many veterans. And I think I remember also reading about veterans back, coming back from World War One and World War Two that also were so they were had problems finding places to live or jobs, that they actually I think they formed a tent city outside the White House at one point because the World War One veterans came home during the Depression.
Right.
So there were no. Yeah. So this is something I don't think people think about the service, but they don't think about like what happens after when they come home. And the comment that Phil made is absolutely right. I know people. I've known veterans who served during in Vietnam. And I've known one fellow for 15 years, and he's just now barely starting to teach me about some of the things he experienced. And
thanks,
that's
Bobby.
Just getting on. Yeah.
Appreciate that.
Thanks, Bobby.
I was going to say back to you, Richard, but you're going to send it back to me, aren't you?
I am.
Okay. This next piece is my piece. It's called Remembered Today. He felt the lash, took the rude sword handed him, fought and died, sprawling faceless in a nameless field. He received his draft notice on Monday, was inducted on a Friday, trained 100 day, and died on his first day. Was there ever a noble serf forced to fight for love of country, whose belly was not empty as his guts spilled to earth? Was there never a noble knight who rallied the rabble, who had not feasted the night before battle and dreamt of glory? 1,000 green helmets, thousands more, ground up on the beaches, torn to pieces, tumbling tatters of pink and red. Flying gods and chariots dropping death, myth and science, centuries removed each from the other, it's all one. Merchant sailor, welcome home from 2 years at sea. Quick tankard at the inn spells king's doom for thee. A shilling in your drink, be impressments perfidy. Clapped in irons to sail again, far from home and family. No recourse. The press gang is deaf to their frantic plea. Taken off to fight Napoleon as an unwilling enrollee. First, you fight not to die. Second, you fight for food to live, to survive at the basic level. Then for land and wealth, power and politics. Then madness. But I would speak of today, of the common soldier who fights for love of our country purely, who seeks no greater glory than to survive in the service of their honor when they were called to arms. Countless have served over the course of our time. Many, too many, did not return. Simple white crosses in endless waves. Grains of sand, spinning in a sad wind? I think not. Remembered today with gratitude and love, each one, we salute you. End poem.
Bravo, Laurent. Powerful piece, and your reading really brought it to life. Painful, honest look as a soldier through time's mirror brought solemnly home into our present-day lens. Wonderful writing.
Thank you.
So let's give some more comments. Tom, your thoughts.
this is really, I like this, LeBron. I like how you built from the early serfs to the glory of those lords and late lords. You thought that by having all the serfs getting, doing all the fighting while they marched around and got to look glorious, and the difference in the meals, the whole British way of bringing men into war through press gangs has long an ugly history to that. And but it's a nice piece in this in terms of keeping the history clear. And then the last part, because we've shifted to an extent since, you might say, since the Civil War, to more being about fighting for a purpose, fighting for a reason, not fighting because somebody was standing behind us with a lash. And so in some ways it becomes even sadder. The damage that war does, and you catch that in a really striking way through the use of history and breaking this into its three vignettes. Very well done.
Thank you, Tom.
Thanks, Tom. And Bobby, your thoughts?
I also like the progression from earlier days to more recent times, and the as Tom said, the shift in motivation from the reason to fight being physical punishment to getting dragged off in shackles to love of country is I really appreciated that shift in. And paradigm, that also very significant, made for a very powerful piece. And the last portion of it, the who seeks no greater glory than to survive in the service of their honor when they were called to arms, that just hit my gut. That was so poignant, so strong. Countless have served over the course of our time. Many, too many, did not return. Simple white crosses and endless waves. And that visual imagery of Flanders and of Arlington. I used to have a job at a building that was actually right across the street from Arlington Cemetery, and I got to look out the window at those rows and rows of headstones every day. And let me tell you something, that hits you every day. You get that constant reminder of all of those lost lives. And I think your piece is just, it's breathtaking.
Oh, you took my breath away.
Absolutely. Great comment. Thanks, Bobby. And Cal.
Oh, golly. All the way through it, I love the history in this. And the different forms of war and how our soldiers came to be there, whether through will or because they were forced to, basically. But there's one line in here that really, really caught me, and that was the very last one in the first section. Flying gods and chariots dropping death, myth and science, centuries removed each from the other. It's all one. As it, you know, it doesn't matter how many different kinds of wars there has been, or for what reason we're there, it's all the same. People, men, women, die. And that's it. And they, you know,
families are left without sons, fathers, husbands, or even wives and mothers, daughters. You know, it's a sad world. And that one line just really brought it all home. It's fantastically written.
Well, thank you, Cal. And let me reference that particular stanza. You got a sense of it perfectly, let me say. But the flying gods and chariots dropping death, there have been descriptions back in Roman times of exactly that. There were flying chariots in the sky, and the gods dropped death. I find that myth is very believable as something that may have actually occurred. It's just too similar. You know, a couple of thousand years apart, and there are gods and chariots dropping bombs. But thank you for that comment. Thank you very much.
Very welcome, sir.
Absolutely. Yep, absolutely, Cal. Much appreciated. Okay, and with that, we're ready for our next one.
All right, our next reader is Thomas, and his piece is up.
Okay. Letters Home in Sand. One. Wherever I am, your fingers will stroke shadows, fire caught in nails, candles lit dance inside effervescence, individual pyres released to a breath, a tongue. Two. Courage is found after the accomplishment. Until then, only shivers of necessity, blind allegiances to standards create footprints others call hallowed. Three. The feel of your arms held memories. Dream me. Keep distance, empty, voracious, the wind, traitorous, stirs my skin. I would be touching you. Four. When the delivery of freedom, the contraction and contradiction of humanity has been accomplished, it will no longer be required to go to the mountaintop. I can't wait to kiss you in the turmoil of homecoming. Five. Ulysses, Alexander, Dwight E., Troy Tripoli, Nagasaki, and what comes next? Separation, dedication, ideals, white crosses posted in sand, chrysanthemums of I love you. End poem.
Nicely done, Thomas. Very well done. Yeah, I love this piece. It reminded me of a Burroughs cut-up. It's quite surreal view of Letters Home, and consequently, you know, it struck of realism because nothing is more surreal than life endured in a killing field. And I think that in many ways, this is, because of its kind of cut-up, surreal nature, this is probably one of the most accurate views of the battlefield that I've read. Very well done. And, Laurent, your ideas on it.
Well, these seem to be snippets of remembrances, little pieces of memories of veterans going to or coming from war or experiencing what they experienced at the time. And in the midst of all that is the absolutely gorgeous first stanza. Wherever I am, your fingers will stroke shadows, fire caught in nails, candles lit dance inside effervescence, individual fires released to a breath, a tongue. That standalone is a wonderful brevity. And as the first part of this vignette, I mean, B2 said breathtaking. This, to me, was breathtaking, especially the second sentence, the candles lit. You followed some glorious muse when you wrote this. This is just terrific. Thank you, Thomas.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Great comment. And Bobby, your thoughts?
I really enjoyed the montage that Thomas assembled here. I noticed that throughout it all, there's the battlefield, and parallel right with it is the memory of home, right with them, what they're experiencing, and there's still the memory of home. The feel of your arms held memories, dream me, keep distance, empty, voracious. The wind, traitorous, stirs my skin, I would be touching you. And then the delivery of freedom, contradiction of humanity, and then I can't wait to kiss you in the turmoil of homecoming. That sustaining thought of returning home through each of the montage, along with the brutality of warfare, is the juxtaposition is just striking. This is a beautifully written piece.
Nice comment, thanks. And Cal, your thoughts?
This is a very eloquent piece, Tom. It's really beautifully done. The one that caught me was number two, courage is found after the accomplishment. Until then, only shivers of necessity, blind allegiances to standards, create footprints others call hallowed. That just, wow, this is absolutely fantastic writing. And it's truly a vision of war in a soldier's eyes, the way I'm reading it. Very beautiful.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Comments. And with that, we're going to move to our next piece, Laurent, if you can.
I just put Kel's piece up.
Poppy proud on Veterans Day, Kel smiles. Grown through the mud and muck of war-torn Europe's rubble long ago, left behind in fields of lime, seeds of the tiny red poppy sublime, symbolic of the blood of soldiers, blood red crimson tied in fields of the dead and dying, injured, limbs scattered across afterward. Commemorate the fallen soldiers. Remember they took a stance. Veterans from the world around fought for freedom on the ground. On the 11th hour of the 11th day of the 11th month, World War I oppressors surrender a buttonhole poppy to remember. Stand at attention with honorable pride. Salute our American flag. For our soldiers dead and alive, wear the crimson poppy with pride and poem.
What a beautiful read that was. You really brought it to life. And, you know, I read these poems aloud before the show, and the lyricism did touch me at that time. But you really made it sing. Imagery throughout the piece, drove home the solemn poem of remembrance. Very nicely done. And Thomas, your thoughts?
Oh, Gal, you did a wonderful job. I mean, the opening four paint the picture, set the stage, and then the second is the explanation, but done with a nice sense of brevity and a sharp touch for the pain that is caught there. And the rest of it just is like a beautiful flourish that reminds us that the thing we have to never forget is people die. And for all the wonderful things that may be won by a war, it's won by people's blood and people die. And you capture the need to both give thanks for all they've done, but also to remember all the cost. And very well done, very beautifully said.
Great comment. And Laurent, your thoughts?
Yeah, I like this a great deal, Cal. Grown through the mud and muck of a war-torn Europe's rubble, long ago, left behind in fields of lime, seeds of the tiny red poppy sublime. You know, you took the red poppy, symbolic of the blood of soldiers, and brought to our attention its importance, the commemoration of the fallen soldiers. On the 11th hour of the 11th day of the 11th month, World War I oppressors surrender a buttonhole poppy to remember. Now, you began with seeds of the tiny red poppy sublime, and at the end tied it to a buttonhole poppy to remember. Really, really gave closure to the poem, which I thought was an excellent recognition of the spilled blood of our soldiers and the importance of remembering them in many ways. The least of what we can do is wear the poppy in our buttonhole. Nicely done.
The red poppy started with the American Legion after the First World War. So I thought it was really awesome to put it in a piece. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Absolutely. And Bobby, I'll give you a final word on the piece.
I thought this was eloquently written. The historic reminders of World War I, the blood of the fallen, the symbolism of the red poppy, commemorate the fallen soldiers, remember they took a stance, veterans from the world around fought for freedom on the ground, the 11th hour of the 11th day of the 11th month. And I like that reminder, World War I oppressors surrender a buttonhole poppy to remember. This is a very reverential piece, and I think it was very eloquently and lovingly done.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Bobby.
Okay, and with that one, Laurent, we're ready for the next.
Okay. I've heard this insult before. Your mother wears combat boots. Captain B2's offering.
Okay, I'm going to preface this by with the explanation that to me, Memorial Day as a veteran is when I remember the fallen, and Veterans Day is when I remember my comrades and the survivors and what we all went through in the military. And we tip our hats to one another. And this is written a little tongue-in-cheek. This may seem inappropriate considering all the pieces that have come before, but I wanted to write this from the point of view of a woman veteran. And your mother wears combat boots. If she raised her hand, they swore her in. Her mom, she cried. Dad had a grin. His shoulders back, chest swelled with pride, no words for what he felt inside. He watched his daughter join the Corps, his heart could not have hoped for more. The story, his storytelling, he'd hoped would spawn the path she'd set her feet upon. After basic trainings on qualified help, she found that she began to do well. Her decision made within the first year that this life choice would become her career. Her stripes, they came to schools too. Around each corner, there was something new. With each daily challenge, she would willingly spar until she swapped her stripes for a bar. Toe-to-toe with her comrades, one with the other, until eventually her heart found another. A life in the Corps, together they'd share, as this unit began their journey as a pair. Time passed, and eventually it would seem a two-Marine household became a fire team. The lessons shared helped the youngsters get along. The two grew resilient, independent, strong. Now, kids of Marines are different kids, tough as nails. So other kids would ridicule, mocking, and telling tales. And some kids would sling remarks, attacking attributes. Yeah, yeah, they would shout, your mother wears combat boots. I suppose you all think making nasty comments will hurt us. And I know that you'd really, really like us to make a fuss. But what you said doesn't bother us one little bit because we are very proud, you see. You're absolutely right. She does. And
nicely done, Bobby. So I am always a little bit nervous when I've got a poem on the show that I haven't read beforehand. Because
yes.
You always run the risk that there's, you know, multiple layerings and hard to understand metaphors. So I breathed a sigh of relief when I saw your mother wears combat boots, because I knew I was in for some good storytelling. And sure enough, you brought it home. And a very funny way of bringing us the feminist view of service in the military. So, you know, nothing wins us over as much as comedy does. It's subtle and quite effective. And you did that all quite well, Bobby. So bravo.
Thank you.
And let's get you some comments. Laurent, your thoughts.
Well, you know, I've got to go to that last stanza immediately. I suppose you all think making nasty comments will hurt us. And I know that you'd really, really like us to make a fuss. But what you said doesn't bother us one little bit because they're very proud, you see. You're absolutely right. She does. Which I thought was a superb payoff to an inspiring poem about Marines and their life. What a great put down without employing anger. Simply using the truth. Bravissimo.
Thank you.
Great comment. And Thomas, your thoughts? Oh, I'm sorry.
I
made a reference that I wasn't sure people would understand. So I did put in the author's notes, a fire team is a four Marine. It equals four Marine riflemen. So when you've got a fire team, you've got a team leader plus four other Marines. And I just wanted to, and I didn't have any children. I didn't issue Marine progeny, but I did know plenty of kids who are Marines, kids of Marines, and they are a tough, scrappy lot, and they don't take crap from anybody. Laurent. Recognize the insult, and I put an explanation for it at the bottom.
Absolutely. Go ahead, Thomas, your comment.
Well, I just delighted in this because it gives both the on-base quality of what it takes to get there and the home-base quality of what it takes to continue to go there. And I really like that because it's viewed from the viewpoint of a female in service, but it catches a whole lot of what being in service means, both in terms of making it in the field and making it on, you know, in the service, but also making it at home. And that's something that's important to keep in mind, that it's really easy to see soldiers sort of two-dimensionally and forget that, you know, that there's a whole human being there that's going through a whole human existence, and it has to, we have to care for that. From enlisted families, making sure they're making enough money that they don't suddenly find themselves having to go to social services and get on the dole, to officers and captains getting enough support that they can make the transition from being on board ship or being in command on the field and coming home where all of a sudden nobody's going to snap to like they did in the field. It was a very good piece. Really, really liked it. I liked the humor, too, because that helps to make it even real.
Thank you very much.
Absolutely. Great. Great comment. And Cal.
Well, first of all, I would like to say thank you very much for your service, Bobby. God bless you.
Thank you.
I really, really enjoyed this, not so much for the humorous bit of it, because that was great, but also for the feminine insight into the military and war and, you know, family life of a Marine or soldiers. So that was really, really fantastically done. Beautiful.
Thank you very much.
Great comments, everyone. And with that, we're ready for our next one, Laurent.
All right, Richard. We're coming back at the top. You're the next reader. I just put up Rex's piece.
Okay. Okay, so this is called Triage, Then and Now. These foreign fields where hate is strong, we stride alone in twilight's gloom. A scalding stage with shadows long, these foreign fields where hate is strong. The fighting's fierce, it's all gone wrong. This barren earth is now our tomb. These foreign fields where hate is strong, we stride alone in twilight's gloom. This barren earth is now our tomb, where soldiers bleed at freedom's gate. We fertilize this ground and groom. This barren earth is now our tomb. These urban scapes have spelled our doom. Take care of those denied our fate. This barren earth is now our tomb, where soldiers bleed at freedom's gate. Take care of those denied our fate. They need you now. Help heal their souls. Too many broken minds can't wait. Take care of those denied our fate. These glass houses, an awful state, and they're adrift on shallow shoals. Take care of those denied our fate. They need you now. Help heal their souls. End poem. Okay, so thanks. Let's start at the top. Let's start with you, Laurent. What'd you think?
Well, I had the real pleasure of reading this a couple of years ago. And those lines, take care of those denied our fate. They need you now. Help heal their souls. Resonates even more now than it did before, because we don't seem to have made any progress in that direction. I mean, to me, those lines are the heart of the piece, taking care of our wounded veterans, mind and body, heartfelt, powerful poem.
Great comment. Yeah, and it dovetails quite well with my thoughts on it. I thought it was a hauntingly beautiful poem, intoned by the fallen in honor of the forgotten, physically and or emotionally wounded survivors. A brilliant speaking of truth. And, a great honor to read, too. And, Thomas, your thoughts?
I the first thing is the structure, do it Villanelle and do it that well, and do it in a way that resounds and really sings and capture that sense of despair, that sense of trying to remember to take care and be there for those who have fallen. It's beautifully done. I was like just kind of awed by the whole thing.
Absolutely. Good comment. And Cal, your thoughts?
Well, I take it along the same lines as your own, Richard. Only this is more about actually living through the war, whereas yours is going on after. But this also has that sense to it, you know, that we need to, you know, take care of them when they do come home, no matter what. Because they did fight for us. And, you know, to neglect them when they need us the most is just absolutely horrific. I really like the fact that he keeps repeating, this barren earth is now our tomb. These glass houses, an awful state, and they're adrift on shallow shoals. Take care of those denied our faith. They need you now. Help you to feel their souls. It's a very beautiful piece, very eloquent and truly well written.
Absolutely. Great comment. And with that, Laurent, I'm going to move to the next one.
All right. I'm the next reader, but before I start, I'd like to say that we've got less than 20 minutes left, a fair amount of poetry left, so if we can just keep our comments a little shorter, that will help.
Sure.
This is by Laura Sanders. It's called 1914-1918 War. They sacrificed their lives, entered the gates of hell, stumbled on blindly while all around them fell, war-weary, ragged, faces encrusted in black, impatient for the whistle, ready for attack. In their hearts burned everlasting hope, carrying love letters and handwritten notes, gifts, tiny mementos carried in pockets, and shells blasted like exploding rockets. They died as all good heroes die, hoping for a better world for you and I, wanting to set the world free, but many would shudder if they could see the selfish world we live in today. Would they care for its hostile ways? Because for our today, they gave their tomorrow. So let us be grateful, not wallow in sorrow. Let us make their sacrifice worthwhile and help one another with willingness and a smile. For at our darkest hour, our country they saved with their lives, which they so bravely gave. End poem.
Very nicely read, Laurent. Great stuff. I thought this was a beautiful rhyming tribute to those who gave all in the Great War. Very nicely done. And Bobby, a quick comment from you, Kat.
The structure is beautifully, the rhyme, the cadence, very smooth. The message is very clear, very straightforward. It is a great homage to the lives lost and sacrifices work. It's a beautifully, brilliantly written piece.
Great comment. And Laurent, as the reader, I'll give you a quick word.
Yeah, I happen to notice that Rex called this a visceral opening in these no notes of wars to end all wars. And I've got to say, he said it better than I could have said it. It was visceral. How can you possibly imagine what it's like unless you are there? You can't even scratch the surface. And I think she did more than scratch the surface with this excellent piece.
Absolutely. Great comment. Okay, with that, we'll have time for our next one.
All right. Our next reader is going to be Thomas. And I am putting up a piece by who? Well, let's go with this one. Sorry? Not prepared. Okay.
That's all right.
Thomas, give it a read.
Okay, let me get it up here. Here it is. El Alamán by Jenny Middleton. There were no poppies in the sand, dry desert heat seared all green land. Men crept around beleaguered stones, dust and dry and gray grit the sea to their bones. In El Alamein, troops at Montgomery's command set minefields, concealed wire bands, drove tanks gorging the barren ground with rust amid gunfire's sound. In El Alamein, death and ropes the enemy stand, and evil men bled slow retreat. The man's aborted in fair defeat. Destroyed by just determined hands in Alamein.
Nicely done, Thomas. Yeah, I thought this was a powerful poem. Go ahead, Thomas.
I just thought the opening line, "There are no poppies in the sand," really set it up to make you recognize that this was going to be a bloody nightmare of a battle. And he mentioned just enough, like troops at Montgomery's command, to get you to understand that, you know, this was in the deserts, and this was probably North Africa. And I just like the way she did the whole thing. Very, very striking, very strong.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah, I agree. I thought the rhyming verse was quite different from her normal fare, but yet her skill shone through. It's a poem of contrast, El Alamein versus Flanders, the speed, the technology, mechanization, all highlighted. Still the truth of the horrors of war remains unchanged throughout. Very well done. And Laurent, I'll give you a final word on this one.
Yeah, that first stanza really does stand out. The story of El Alamein is a fascinating one. And I like the fact that Jenny was able to connect to her own past in the writing of this, her paternal grandfather severely wounded in battle, in this particular battle of El Alamein, never more than a couple of points of contact away from history. Excellent piece.
Absolutely. And with that, we'll move to our next one.
All right. Our next piece is going to be for Kel to read. Kel, if you don't mind. I'm putting up this piece for you.
Okay,
Naomi Sarah.
By Isthmus was never taken. Naomi Sarah. Oh, how the earth forgets the horrors of war. Those times of sun dips into the ocean, sizzling out its bright. As willows weep on graves of dead young soldiers, now bedded in soft leaves, muddy trenches bleed the green, blood blooms in the blossoms, their fragrances are dreams, death to the streams and sorrow. But she'll remember always the sky's perpetual gray, covered in ash and gunpowder. The flames of burning cities ablaze, a shallow grave, and that he was only 17. And when the war ended, and when Searcy laid in a field, the field alive in the grass, the freshness that breezy wind gives it, the air that flowed over her skin, those feelings that turned her into liquid crystal tears. You stand proud, Jane Kende. Let us never forget you, for you ran unafraid into the storm, stood strong and clear throughout the fog, and by the mist was never taken. End poem. Oh, she was a Navy nurse.
Nice read, Cal. Yeah, go ahead and take the first share.
To an active combat zone. Oh, wow. Oh, born and raised in Ohio. He's one of mine. Cool lady. Sorry.
No, go ahead and take the first share. What did you think of it?
Well, I was just reading the and about this Jane Kende. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right. This was really, really a brilliant poem. I love the, it had a really wonderful rhythm and line running to it. I love this. We shall always remember always the sky's perpetual gray covered in ash and gunpowder. It's just very strong and poignant writing. Very well done.
Great comment. And Laurent, your thoughts?
I thought it was a great tribute to Jane Kende, one of the unsung heroes, the Navy flight nurses. In fact, nurses of all stripes, all members of the great fight. Excellent piece.
Absolutely. Yeah, I too thought it was a strong offering on war and the toll it takes on the combatants as well as those who survive its wake. Very well done. And I think we have time for another one.
I'd love to get two in, but at least this one. This is for Captain
sure.
B2.
All righty. My baby brother's gone to war. By Pam H. Walking to school together day after day, sharing bubblegum, inventing games to play. We were young and carefree. We knew about the score until I received the call telling me that brother's gone to war. All the times we laughed, all the times we cried, all the times I had to defend him when his big mouth got him into fights. Now he's not so little. He has a beautiful daughter and a very loving mother. Just knowing that her man is leaving must be killing her deep inside. Still, she holds her head high, leaving behind his family. His country awaits. War is not like heaven, and far be it from those persons. This sadness in my heart, I don't think I can take it anymore. Seems like just yesterday when I pushed him in the swing. Now my baby brother's gone to war. And her author's notes is originally written November 1990, when her brother went to Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, and you can go ahead and take the first comment if you'd like.
For me? I'm sorry. Were you speaking?
Yeah, sure. Sure, go ahead.
Okay. This is very touching, and it brings to home the relationship where service members have, like Tom said in an earlier comment, they're not two-dimensional. They have families. They have people left behind that worry about them. They can't do anything except worry and wait. And she expresses that so beautifully that this is her brother. She has a history with him, and now she's watching him do something she never expected, which is go to war. And it's a very touching piece.
Great, great comment. Yeah, I too thought it was sad, full of sense memory that made it universal and simultaneously intensely personal. Great job.
Yes.
And Laurent, what do you think? One more?
Absolutely. I'd like to close this out with a piece by Budo. I'm going to put that up for you to read, Richard.
Okay.
It's up now.
It's on my internet connection was failing me, but we are back. Okay. So this is called Strange Fish by Budo. What strange fish are these that wash ashore at Normandy, olive drab and khaki-soaked in hallowed tides, a bitter fate, on shores they rest and never woke, of crimson flows, of sounds abate. Once they swam free in far-off lands, with lakes and streams and beaches aplenty, splashing, frolicking with abandon, these souls, these teens and twenty. And yet now, the only noise we heard from salted deer lapping, steeping upon dark, furrowed earth amid those precious sleeping. May a prayer of thanks be given to them and those of the living they know not of their fallen brethren who have given away in sacrifice to rise from battle to immortal heaven. End poem. So, yeah, I actually read this a while back, and I will stick with my comment from that time, which is that it's a great tribute to those that gave all on that awful June day. Despite all the luck, weather, patent, decoy landing, it was a horrific loss of life, and I thought he brought it home quite well. And, Laurent, I'm going to give you final word on this poem.
Olive drab and khaki soaked in hallowed tides, a bitter fate, on shores they rest and never woke, of crimson flows, of sounds of fate. Now you marry that to the image, and if it doesn't move you at all, if you don't see something in those abstract sculptures married to the words of this brilliant piece, then you're dead. It's great. Love it.
Absolutely. Actually, I think maybe we have time for one more comment. Cal, why don't you close us out?
Well, I just wrote something. It's just, it's a fantastic writing, a very haunting poem of the Normandy shores. And yeah, it is very haunting and deeply, deeply, deeply poignant. Very well done.
Great comment. Thanks so much. And thanks to everyone. Kel, Bobby, Tom, and of course, special thanks to my co-host, Laurent. You guys really made this a very special night of poetry. And of course, special thanks to our poets that contributed to tonight. And then a thanks to our admin, Fill My Eyes, because we had some technical difficulties getting started, and she kind of saved the whole show. So she's always working there in the background to make this whole thing come off as it should every other Thursday, and we are incredibly appreciative. Coming up in 30 minutes, we've got Pam's show. So please join Pam in 30 minutes. She's looking for callers and always a great show there. And then finally, Fill My Eyes with Poetry, the Open Night Poetry, tomorrow, 10 p.m. And Laurent, I believe you're co-hosting that one as well.
I am. And looking forward to it.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. And so, it's just one of those shows where no matter how we try to end it, it's never going to really express the power, the emotion, and the gratitude we have to those who serve, those who continue to serve. So I'm just going to end it there. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you, Richard. Thank you, Laura.
Good night, all.
Night.
Night.